Well, already they're campaigning and the election is almost a year away. Aspiring state legislators looking at the new district maps, checking their wallets. Soon they're going to have talking points. Is there a better way? Good morning and welcome to Talk of Alaska. I'm Steve Heimel. It's been pointed out repeatedly that most Alaskans prefer no party affiliation, but where is the political middle ground? Our number, 1-800-478-8255, a local call on Anchorage at 550-8422, email talk@alaskapublic.org. How much political common ground do we have is a subject on Talk of Alaska statewide.
Today's program is underwritten in part by BuzzBiz Studios, a full-spectrum media production studio with marketing services. BuzzBiz Studios help Alaskan businesses be seen and be heard in all advertising media. Additional information at buzzbiz.biz. Quitting tobacco is the best thing you can do for your health. Join a free program that will help you create an easy-to-follow plan to quit. It will show you how to get ready, take action, and then live the rest of your life as a non-smoker. Alaska's Tobacco Quit Line provides 8 weeks of patches, gum, or lozenges, and quit coaches that are trained to address Alaskans, including expectant mothers. There's more information at 1-800-QUIT-NOW or visit alaskaquitline.com. This message sponsored by Alaska's Tobacco Quit Line. It's free, it's confidential, and it works. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of APRN, this station, or its underwriters.
Might not even be our opinions this time around. Hello, I'm Steve Heimel, and I want to welcome to the show Senior Fellow at the Institute of the North, Malcolm Roberts. Welcome to Talk of Alaska, Malcolm.
Thanks, Steve. Nice to be here.
Well, it's great to have you on this show. The idea of this show was basically popped up because I was trying to get Malcolm to come on and talk about something else. But he said, well, you know, and then he made this pitch for political middle ground, and he handed me a piece of paper. And I looked at the piece of paper, and what it was is things all Alaskans can probably agree on, or most of them. And I found that, wow, I kind of had to agree with all of them. And then I thought, well, could it be as simple as this? So Malcolm, you actually wrote this, the All Alaskan Agenda. This is your idea?
Well, it was two or three of us were talking about this issue, and we came up with that. Let's see what we could come up with. And we began meeting weekly really almost a year ago, talking about, I guess what was common about all of us is that we're all enthused Alaskans. We love the place. And we figure that most Alaskans do, or they wouldn't stay. And that why do we have to mirror the acrimony, the partisan politics that we see that really brought Washington, D.C. to a halt? Why can't we use our love of Alaska to unite us on a common agenda?
Yeah. And I think, you know, we're going to see, partly because of the next election, I think. I mean, whenever there's an election that people are looking forward to, then they start wanting to have something that they can point to that they accomplished while they were in there before, and something bad they can say about their opponent, right? And people are already loading, and that makes this a difficult and probably kind of a gridlocky session coming up for the state legislature. So we see that. We see the just gridlock. You know, we already know, you know, there will be a fuss in the Senate about the governor's bill that the House has passed. The Republicans support tax breaks for the oil business. And the Senate's a bipartisan, but the Democrats certainly in the Senate think it's a giveaway. And so they're gonna do this, you know. And then all the lobbying and propaganda and carrying on. And Lord have mercy, can't we just kind of get to the bottom of this and actually start solving some problems?
Well, that's absolutely sums it up. And part of the issue, of course, is that 59 out of our 60 incumbent legislators have to run for reelection this year because of reapportionment. I really can't remember when that many, I mean, not since maybe when statehood started, when almost down to, I think, isn't it Senator Dennis Egan is the one who doesn't have right. to run? but everybody else does. So it's going to be a very hectic political year. And you add to that the Supreme Court decision, Citizens United, of about a year ago, that basically just opened the floodgates for literally billions of dollars that will go into this 2012 political year. So it's going to be a rough and confusing year in politics for the Alaska people. And it might be nice if we had at least a common agenda, a short common agenda that we could agree to help us measure up our people in public office.
I'd also like to welcome to the show Mike Kenney. He's been on the show before as the business manager at Teamsters Local 959. Mike, you're no longer doing that, right?
That's correct. I retired in 2007.
And so now you're here, and you're one of these people that's been meeting with Malcolm about this, trying to find the all-Alaska agenda.
We have. We've talked, actually, throughout the years, we've had different issues that we worked on, specifically the all-Alaska gas line, the merger on the North Slope, BP and ARCO, really huge issues that affect the state and affect us greatly. And recently, of course, we're still very frustrated over the fact that we're not able to get our gas to market. But having seen the elections in 2010 in this state and some of the wedge issues that were used and some of the advertising, it was driving us apart as a citizenry rather than having us working together for common goals. And whatever else exceptionalism may mean, Alaska is an exceptional place, and it has got the future is bright if we can work together. However, if we are allowing ourselves to be separated and to get into those wedge issues, we'll be nothing more than a territory again or a colony.
That was very well put, and I don't think I've ever heard anybody say Alaska exceptionalism before. But I kind of like it. I mean, it's got a ring to it. I mean, American exceptionalism, it kind of gives me hives. But Alaska exceptionalism, wow. And I say that because ever since the 50th anniversary of statehood, I've been thinking about what's the next 50 years going to be like.
You bet.
And it's really got me thinking, well, we really have a lot of potential, things that we don't really think of. But if you try and cast it ahead 50 years or 47 years now, and you think about more Arctic shipping, what's that mean for Alaska? You think about the incredible cross-cultural environment that we already have here and
That's
the potential that we have to break new cultural ground in
well
terms
said.
Of cross-cultural communications. That's an opportunity. Our telecommunications and what we're able to do with our content through increased and better bandwidth, I think we can once again start leading in that area. And that's not even to start on the kind of resources that we have, the actual natural resources that are just sitting there waiting. I mean, that's not to talk about the huge coal deposits. The natural gas, there's so much that nobody quite knows where the market is for it, but wherever it is, there are markets for it, and on it goes. I mean, maybe Alaskan exceptionalism is not such a bad concept. Let's see what the listeners have to say about it at 1-800-478-8255, 478-TALK. If calling from Anchorage, the phone number is 550-8422. Now, we intend to get this up on the website and so that people can actually go look in the website and refresh their memories, but I'm going to go ahead and read off your agenda as you've handed it out here.
You bet.
And I'd ask our listeners then to ask themselves, which one of these do you have a problem with?
Steve, let me just interject that there's only 10 points. Now, I think you know that I worked for many years with former Governor Hickel.
Yeah.
And he loved brevity. He once said that if the Congress had written the Ten Commandments, they'd be known as the Ten Volumes. Well, the audience is not going to be hit with 10 volumes today. These are all basically one-liners or two clauses in each, and there are just 10 of them.
Yes, and actually, when you take the initial letter of each sentence, you discover that that also spells something out. We'll get to that. But let's start. Nonpartisan Alaskans, native and non-native, working together. Number one. Two, ownership of the Commonwealth by the common man. Three, the Alaska owner state, a model for the world. Four, fish and all renewable resources harvested for sustained yield. And the next one, oil, gas, and mineral taxation, fair and fearless, no servile deference to corporate muscle or greed. And then respect for all Alaskans, all cultures, colors, and creeds. And the last four, statehood promises asserted, our compact defended. All Alaska natural gas pipeline, alternative energy pioneer for America. Love for the land, care for its beauty and wildlife, and education, economy, and environment, second to none.
There it is.
All right. So pretty phrases, but I mean, let's face it, you got that gas line in there.
You bet, and that shows the bias of the of my role in, as one of the authors, as I've been fighting along with Mike here, Mike Kenney, and Governor Hickel when he was with us, and others, for years to try and get the attention of those in public office that, yes, the All Alaska Pipeline gas line has been supported by the voters. If the markets are in Asia, they're not anymore in Canada or the South 48. We need to get on with it. So it's really, I think, the only option left standing, as well as being by far the most lucrative for the state.
Well, I mean, when you say, well, can most Alaskans support it? And then you say on that one, well, that's already actually been to a vote.
And 62%.
Yes, and not only that, but then you have to say, well, there also have been candidates who have probably got a boost out of espousing that position from time to time.
Very true. Very true. I think the Alaska public, as I've followed the polls and so on over the years, is solidly with the concept. There's there's some sort of skepticism that we can make it happen, that the those who are producers and control the resources have other agendas, and so there's sort of a kind of despair that maybe we can't make it happen, but they still believe it's the best alternative for that resource.
All right. So you take the first letters of these, they say not for sale.
Correct.
You have a point in here, like number five, oil, gas, and mineral taxation, fair and fearless, no servile deference to corporate muscle or greed. However, don't you think in order to attract investment in whichever kind of gas line you're talking about, in order to get that investment, there has to be some kind of stability to the tax climate?
Absolutely. Stability is key. And as a matter of fact, our tax climate has been very stable. It's criticized for not being, and that is basically because we had a change in the tax structure, oil taxes, the PPT. What year was that, Mike? Help me. It was about
2005.
And that was the one that was surrounded by the charges of corruption, the FBI investigation and stuff. So the legislature had to go in and redo it. Is that unstable? No. It was an attempt that the PPT was to get a larger return to the Alaskans because we own this resource.
Right.
And then when it had its problems, it had to be redone.
Well, probably you could say most Alaskans are going to agree we should get the best deal we can from the industry, but we don't want to discourage them from investing.
Absolutely right.
Yeah. So probably you got agreement on that. But in this case, we're in a situation where we're utterly polarized. we have the governor saying, no, we got to get rid of the progressivity. And we had the progressivity is what is fueling the state treasury. Basically, the oil industry is enormously profitable right now, and it's a question of how big a piece do we get.
And just so for those who haven't...
So the question is the piece big enough? But that's not what they're fighting about. They're fighting about whether we should get a piece or not. That's crazy.
Yeah, and I think it's important to clarify for those who are not following it closely what progressivity means, and that... That is was factored into the ACES tax pattern, where after a certain point, as the sale price of oil goes up, the tax percentage goes up. It progressively takes a step,
right?
And that's what's gone on.
Right, and Democrats will say, well, we can use. Tax credits and things like that and incentives for the people that actually invest and handle it that way. And the governor's saying, wait a minute, it's just too big of a piece and the industry is not going to invest here because they're having the money that they make.
Steve,
they're just having to give it away again.
There's been a saturation bombing, as the industry is wont to do when they want something. The airways are filled with them, with the people whose living depends upon their employment. And that's not necessarily a majority of Alaskans, but that media is so effective in getting their point across. When the reality is, if you look throughout this world, our oil and gas are reasonably priced. They'll get Iraqi oil for $2 a barrel. It's amazing the differential. They'll talk about North Dakota. North Dakota is fine. There's not there's a lot of activity there, but that oil and gas is not owned in common. Alaska is the only state, the only political entity that owns our resources in common. So they've got to make deals with the private owners of 40 acres and put their gas wells or oil wells. That doesn't show up in the taxation, but that is still money out of the producers or whoever's pocket. So we're looking once again. At long term, we're trying to look at what decision in getting Alaska's resources to market is best for Alaska 50 years from now.
Yeah, but you talk to Pat Gallin and Marty Rutherford, the people who actually, engineered the tax system we have now, and they say, the oil industry can outspend us on expertise. Till the cows come home. It pays them to do it. The state, really, in a lot of ways, what would be a reasonable budget in consultants for oil and gas taxation where the state really could have a firm position and be sure of it?
Well, I think what you referred to is very true, that the industry, it's to their benefit. To challenge and put pressure on the state.
Well, it's due diligence.
It's partly that, but it's also a sort of an arm-twisting routine, and Alaska's government is hard-pressed to keep up with even the accounting. That's an issue right now with the Department of Revenue being behind in auditing. Oil companies' submittals.
Yeah,
and they're
so
complex.
My question is, Malcolm, how does the state ever pay for all expertise we really need to really have a decent battle here and actually lay down the marker and say, no, you might as well stop campaigning because you're just not going to get it because we're very sure of what we're saying.
Well,
that's what you're calling in here. You're saying no servile deference to corporate muscle or greed.
Yeah, well, when we went back to Juneau and Governor Hickel and his administration went in and I was with him in 1990, we found there were $4 billion of unpaid taxes and royalties. And the previous administrations hadn't wanted to fight the fight. Wally and our Attorney General, Charlie Cole, fought the fight, and that $4 billion became the Constitutional Budget Reserve Fund that helped tide the state over in the following year. So a lot of it's guts and leadership.
Yeah. Okay. Well, let's take a few of these. Our telephone number, by the way, our subject is, can we find an Alaskan political consensus? The telephone number, 1-800-478-8255. A local call in Anchorage at 550-8422. Email is talk@alaskapublic.org. And we have Mike Kenney and Malcolm Roberts, and they're putting forth the All-Alaskan Agenda. Now, granted, it's going to talk about the in-state, you know, All-Alaska, as they like to call it, pipeline. But beyond that, you know, and certainly reasonable minds are going to differ on the gas line, but you do have a point that there's probably a majority that's for the All-Alaska gas line, regardless of the professional expertise and the people that say it doesn't pencil out and all that sort of thing. Markets are changing now anyway, and things are very much up in the air. You just simply have to say things are very, very much up in the air right now with all that. I'd like to get off of that point. Go ahead.
Well, there's an ancillary point here, and it's not just whether or not they need security for any of the resources, whether it be gold or molybdenum or oil. It's our leadership. And we've got to have confidence that our leaders are acting as their constitutional responsibility dictates, and that is to represent Alaskans to the maximum extent. You're absolutely correct. The corporate leaders, they've got a fiduciary responsibility to maximize profits for their shareholders. There's a revolving door in Juneau. You mentioned a couple of people and the governor. There is a lot of people in Juneau representing us that sometimes it's hard to tell what hat they have on at that particular time. We need to have, this is why spurring this Alaska agenda, we need to have people in office that, right or wrong, whether it's an All-Alaska line or a bullet line or whatever, we know whose corner they're on. Whose side are you on? And sometimes it's hard for us to determine whose side the people that are elected are on.
Well, there's usually some kind of reasonable argument that can be made, but it seems to me what you really are doing here is you're just taking the so-called wedge issues and taking them off the table and saying, okay, now if you take these social things, constitutional things, want to do things that are unconstitutional or not, if you just take all that stuff off of the table, let's see if what all of us as Alaskans can agree on, and then maybe we can all kind of stick together and vote that way.
Yeah, and there are a lot of very passionate people who care about wedge issues, and that's the way you describe them. I think you're probably referring to
we can talk about reproductive rights.
Reproductive rights, abortion, death penalty, and so on. All these things are very important, and I wouldn't want personally to discourage anybody to get involved in politics for whatever their passion is. I mean, that's not what we're trying to do. We're not trying to quiet anybody. But for those of us who are really concerned about the future of our economy, the quality of our environment, and the quality of our education, which are three of the main themes of this agenda, we should be able to unite on those points.
Quality of our education?
Yes.
Tell me more.
Well,
Mayor, you're talking educational investment. You're talking more partnerships with the private sector. I mean, look at the state budget, how much of it goes to education now.
Right. Well, Mayor Dan Sullivan just had a summit on the quality of education where he raised the issue, why shouldn't we have the finest education, public education system in the nation? Why not have goals that are way up there for us to reach and stretch for? Now, my wife and I have three kids of our own and another that went through the public schools here, and we were very impressed by the quality of education they got. I mean, there's a lot of wonderful teachers and administrators and so on. I think Carol Como is one of the finest public service I've ever run into.
And retiring.
And she's about to retire. Yeah. But, there's a lot of good in our education system. But there's also a lot of good in raising the standard really high and reaching for it together.
Huh. Okay. So I think I heard you say more investment.
Not necessarily more investment mm-hmm. in. It's not all money. It's not all money.
No, of course, not all money, but
it's a lot of it is support. I've been involved in the Bridge Builders of Anchorage project for some years. It involves we have 43 cultures involved. As you know, we're such a diverse community here, and you go into the classrooms now, and the children are from all over the world, and a lot of those families and parents need more support to understand the American education system, that you've got to weigh in there. You've got to be there. You've got to get to know their teachers. You've got to back up the kids and what they do. All these basics are things that don't necessarily take more money, but they take more community support. And that's one of the pieces.
I'll tell you right now, Molly Hooch created a situation where we have a very strong, expensive rural educational system in the state. And what tends to happen quite frequently is the schools on the hill over there, the towns over here, and they don't talk to one another. And many people have tried to solve this problem. I think all over Alaska, more community engagement of the educational system is absolutely mandatory for
absolutely
we're gonna get anywhere.
Right. Absolutely right. And I'm sure your listeners probably have a lot of thoughts on that as well. But that's absolutely key. And I mean, I just visited recently ANSEP, the Alaska Native Science and Engineering right. program at the university. It's a wonderful program. You know, there are breakthroughs happening. We should celebrate those breakthroughs and move forward.
Let's go to Charlie, joins the program from Homer. Charlie, welcome to Talk of Alaska.
Thank you, Steve. Finally. Well, I've been up here 34 years. I came up in 76. I've been in the oil business all my life. The oil deals that the oil companies, the ones that work up here in Alaska, have been making me recently down in Texas and New Mexico on mineral rights that I own, 25% royalty, 25% royalty, 20%, 22.5%. That's my last three deals. We should have the best education system, the best highway system, the best medical care delivery system, the best roads, highways. I mentioned that. We should have it all. Please, Lord, give us one more oil boom, and we promise not to pee it away this time. And finally, somebody, let's get together and do this. This is what the founders, I knew you a culture good. You guys know Vic Fisher. That's what these guys had in mind. That's what I had in mind when I came up here from Texas. I think it's a wonderful idea. Take my telephone number, get in touch with me. Let's work on this and put it over with. We have an opportunity to be have the fairest tax system. You know, the oil companies require that crude oil in order to make the gasoline and the other byproducts that they sell and make billions of dollars on, and we're in touch. Entitled to our fair share of it. And if there's some kind of problem, say we could just form the Alaska Oil Company and we could contract, we could get drilling contractors to come in. We can get everybody to come in and contract that work. We don't have to be expertise in it. And we can do it a lot cheaper than the oil companies are doing it for us and get a lot more money out the other end of it. There's plenty of money up there, plenty of money in Alaska to fund all this stuff. We just have to join together and get away from this other petty stuff. So count me in the best you can, and I'll let somebody else talk.
Oh, that's fantastic. And Steve, I want you to know, I don't know Charlie. I didn't put him up to that.
Oh,
that
no.
was fantastic.
It's all the way down in Homer. All right. Hey, thanks a lot for your vote of confidence there, Charlie. Let's see what happens with the next. Take one more before the break here. Jennifer in Anchorage, welcome to Talk of Alaska.
Hi, Jennifer Harrison, a lifelong Alaskan and long-time listener, but first-time caller, because I just had to call in today because I'm very excited about this topic. I think it's a great topic. I like how you found 10 things that most people agree on, look for common ground. I especially like the first one where you're looking at all of Alaskans, non-natives and natives coming together to work on what we all agree on.
You bet.
I like that.
Sorry to interrupt you, Jennifer, but absolutely, that first one is the in first place for a real reason. I mean, we have such a fantastic cultural heritage from our native Alaska traditions, and we have a very dynamic population that's arrived from the rest of the world. And if we can learn to appreciate each other, work with each other, help each other, we truly could be a model for the world.
Yeah, Yep, I believe we together we could overcome any sort of problem or obstacle.
All right, well, I'll take that as another vote of confidence, Jennifer. Thanks for your call.
Thank you.
Anything more?
No, thank you.
Okay, yeah, I think one of the things has to happen is that the dominant Caucasians need to learn how to be a minority in Alaska. Because, you know, you take Anchorage, really, they already are.
You know, our kids went to West High School, and our son played quarterback for West and went off to a college, and it happened to be a college that was all white, with just a couple of exceptions. He said, "Dad, I've never handed the ball off to a white kid before." You know, and I mean, we had a fantastic team at West that year, and since then they've done even better. But we used to have the whole team over for spaghetti feeds, and it was really a mini United Nations. So it's a wonderful, rich culture that's developing here, and we should build on it.
All right. It's Talk of Alaska. We're talking about, can we find an Alaska political consensus? Is it all that hard? Do we all really know what it is and get distracted? 1-800-478-8255 as Talk of Alaska continues.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company, and by First National Bank Alaska, branches in 18 communities around the state and on the web at fnbalaska.com. Member FDIC, equal housing lender. Alaska Pacific University offers accelerated BA and MBA business degrees with personalized attention for your professional goals, online classes, and small class size supported by a highly respected faculty. A degree from APU is your best value in the business community. Start or finish your business degree at Alaska Pacific University. Enroll now for the spring semester. Learn more at business.alaskapacific.edu. This message sponsored by the Alaska Pacific University Business Department.
It's Talk of Alaska. We've got Mike Kenney and Malcolm Roberts with us. They both have run for public office, Malcolm as a Republican and Mike as a Democrat. And what we're looking at is it possible, is it all that hard to find an Alaskan political consensus? If you just sweep a couple of things off the table, maybe you find we agree about just about everything else. Here's one probably everybody in the room agrees. It comes from Tom in Fairbanks, who says, California passed an initiative changing the redistricting board to a citizens panel not appointed by those in power. Can that be done in Alaska? Could it force a special redistricting if passed? I think we got a constitutional problem there, but nonetheless.
But nonetheless, he's got a great idea.
Yeah.
I mean, there's no question that whoever's the governor, his party, does their darndest come every 10 years when there's reapportionment to shift the districts to the benefit of that party. That's just part of the process. I hadn't heard of the California initiative. I think it's quite interesting. What do you think, Mike?
I think that's an excellent idea.
Yeah.
Take it out of the professionals. You've got the party chairman. They've got their partisan interests, and it's not necessarily going to be in the interest of Alaskans. So, no, with the constitutional issues that it would have, and, of course, our state has got to go through the Department of Justice because of the Native population
Voting
to make
Act.
Sure
yep.
that there's a correct proportion and they're not losing out of the gerrymandering that's inevitably takes place. But, no, that's a very good idea.
Let's go to Merrick. Joins the program from Fairbanks. Welcome to Talk of Alaska, Merrick.
Good morning, Steve, and good morning, Mike and Malcolm, and thank you very much for promoting your Alaska agenda. It's one that I strongly subscribe to. I have a thought that you'd have more Alaskans buying into the agenda if Alaskans truly understood the value of the resources that we all own in common, and that applies to both oil and gas. It's not often that we hear the numbers, and I thought I'd just go through those very briefly.
Great. Let's hear them.
Okay. So we have an estimated 250 trillion cubic feet of estimated reserves on the North Slope.
Not too fast now. 250 trillion cubic feet of natural gas.
Yep.
How long would that keep Anchorage going? or my house or what.
I think about 900 years.
Well, we know that if we took 2 billion cubic feet per day off the North Slope, we'd have enough gas for about the next 340 years. So we have a lot of gas up there. And that gas, if we sell it on the premium world markets, it's worth $3 to $4 trillion in gross value. And
wow.
That makes each Alaskan who owns that gas a multimillionaire.
Now,
wow. when we talk about the oil, we see about $24 billion worth of oil leaving Alaska every year. And that's, that's with the current Alaska North Slope price and the current throughput. And Alaska only keeps about $7 billion of the $24 billion, or about 30% of the total value of the oil that leaves Alaska. And we've got a governor that would like to give away or increase that giveaway and go from $7 billion down to $5 billion. And wouldn't it be interesting if we had a governor that was following your agenda and he says, look, instead of giving away $2 billion a year, let's invest in Alaska. Let's invest in the All-Alaska Gas Line. You know, we certainly know that if over the next 5 years, $2 billion a year is $10 billion, that's enough to get the state equity portion of our project built so that we have, you know, more oil in the taps. We know that if you have a gas line, if you're punching holes in the ground up on the North Slope and you find gas, you've got a place to monetize the gas if you've got the gas line. So, A, it gets more oil in the taps. It gets the coldest state in the country affordable energy. And I don't care if you're Republican, if you're Democrat, you're Libertarian, I think we all desire to have low-cost energy.
What does energy cost in Fairbanks right now?
Oh, yeah, they got a problem up there.
We've got a terrible problem, and it's even worse in rural Alaska. But right now in Fairbanks, the average consumer is using about 1,000 gallons of fuel oil per year at $4 per gallon. So it's $4,000 per year just to keep your home warm if you're an average consumer in Fairbanks. And I know there's folks out in Bush, Alaska, that are paying $7, $8 a gallon for fuel oil. And the question is, how do you compete as a state? How do we promote Alaska exceptionalism if we don't even have affordable energy in the coldest state in the country? And I argue that we cannot succeed as a state if we don't have affordable energy.
Merrick, you know that on this program, Talk of Alaska, that has been a consistent issue brought up to people running for office, to public office holders. Whenever we bring up issues of sustainability or energy, that's the one note everyone keeps sounding, that exact same note you just said. You know, how can we even look ourselves in the face when we have such punitive costs of energy in rural Alaska?
Especially when we have so much that's on state land in Prudhoe Bay that means, according to our Constitution, that we are the co-owners of that resource. All it takes is leadership to get it to the people in rural Alaska who most desperately need it, and Fairbanks as well, and for the rest of us. Up to leadership.
Well, it is leadership, and when I read your agenda, it says oil, gas, and mineral taxation, fair and fearless, no servile deference to corporate muscle or greed. Let me give you an example of one of the problems that we've had. Now, we saw with Frank Murkowski that after the voters in 2002, 138,000 strong, said build the All-Alaska Gas Line, Frank Murkowski sat down with the newly formed board of ANGDA and said, don't work on the voter-mandated gas line. It makes the producers mad. Now, this was just reported. Harold Hines was quoted in the Alaska Dispatch article that just came out in the last week, and I think Alaskans ought to read that, because if you want an example of servile deference, that's it.
Well, I was wondering exactly what servile deference meant. I got it out of the dictionary. I guess that's what it means.
I think we're getting close here. All right. Merrick, thanks. Thanks for doing the math, too.
Thank you, gentlemen.
All right. It is Talk of Alaska. Golly, it's almost sounding like socialism here, you guys. I mean, we got a permanent fund. The minute, here's a wedge issue. The minute anybody says, let's start investing the permanent fund in something that would yield in the future for Alaskans, people go crazy. Nobody would get elected with that.
We've got to get off the idea that we have a three-legged stool. We had the Ted Stevens federal dollars. Those dollars, no matter the best efforts of Mark Begich and Lisa Murkowski, are not going to be a trickle.
No.
And we're going to have to get back. You look at what developed this state, and it was in 1915, and our president said, okay, enough bickering between the Guggenheims and all these great corporations. all of them wanted to build a rail line to get minerals from the interior to the Tidewater. None of them succeeded. They all bickered about each other about the markets, and maybe they had security issues on taxation. I don't know. But it took a president to say, step in and say, we're going to finance, we're going to build, we're going to operate the All-Alaska Railroad, which is nothing more than a transportation system, just like a gas line, on wheels. And that is what it took to get our rail belt. That's what it took to get Anchorage. Anchorage is a government town. So there's no socialism there. It's government performing a duty to get the infrastructure, needed infrastructure there, so the private sector can develop.
Yeah, and if you look into the history of that, you discover that the worry in the policy sector was, what happens if we don't do it? You know, what kind of place are we going to have up there if we don't? If we're not the ones that own that railroad, if the people, if what do you say, the commonwealth by the common man,
yeah,
ownership of the commonwealth by the common man,
right?
And didn't have that, we have a private railroad opening up the whole state, belonging to some plutocrats, you know, in New York City.
First of all, Mike, could you clarify which president made that decision on the railroad? I know it was Judge Wickersham from Alaska, who was our delegate to Congress back in the early part of the last century, who really was the champion for the railroad. But which president?
Woodrow Wilson is the one that made direct.
Okay. And that was quite a bold decision. I think it's the only railroad built by the federal government in the country. And so it was a big and a bold decision, but of course it's been the key to the our whole, of course, our rail belt, and it was quite a breakthrough. Now, when you mentioned socialism, my hackles come up, Steve, because
I'm not surprised, Malcolm.
Yeah, Alaska is not socialist. We are kind of a hybrid because of our Constitution, our Article 8, our natural resource article, which says that that our natural resources must be conserved and developed for the maximum benefit of our people. That's item one. Item two is that when we became a state, Congress granted our demand for a sizable land estate and 103 million acres, but they wanted to be sure that we used that to stand on our own feet, to build our own economy and our own government, and not give it away in any way, like that had been happening in some of the great scandals back east, the Teapot Dome and so on. Mike, you probably know that history. And so they included in our Statehood Act the terms of what's called the Mineral Leasing Act of 1920, and that says that subsurface resources, that means oil and gas and so on, must forever remain with the government entity. If anyone tries to give it away or sell it off, it reverts to the federal government. That's why Wally Hickel coined the phrase the owner state, not because it was sort of a cool name. It's true. We are a state that owns in trust for the people the subsurface and the surface resources on Alaska's 103 million acres. So that's the history of those, actually behind those two points in the agenda.
And this platform goes on to call it a model for the world.
Well, yeah, and this is something that some of us with the Institute of the North have been thinking and working on, particularly we've had some approaches from African countries that are just starting oil development. They've seen other countries that have really suffered because of oil development rather than benefiting from it. It's called the oil curse. And what we have been telling them is that we're not perfect. We're still struggling with issues. I mean, we had how many legislators, Steve, end up in jail? And with big oil comes big money, comes big temptation. I mean, this is human nature. It's not Alaskan or African or whatever. They're interested in how we have developed our resources so that we're proud of the environmental record and how it benefits the people through our permanent fund and our PFD, which is the only one of its kind in the world, by the way. There are 65 sort of permanent funds around the world. Only one gives a dividend. That's the Alaska Permanent Fund. And so that illustrates, it's not that government likes to send money to people. We are the owners, and so we get a dividend every year.
We are the owners. Well, I mean, I'm thinking one of the things that you brought up is there's maybe more of a mandate for Alaska under your conception of things for development of the resources. It's in the Constitution, and you say it's in the compact that the resources should be developed. And of course, everyone would say, "Oh, yes, but responsibly."
Oh, it does
okay,
say
but
that.
Then we're in the same situation we are with the trying to outspend the oil companies in terms of analyzing the taxation pattern, where there's an awful lot of money has to be spent if you're going to effectively regulate resource extraction. And Alaska's track record on this is rather abysmal. All you have to do is look up in the North Slope, and it's not until they started having spills and the feds cracked down. And the state objected, meanwhile, saying, well, it's not really federal. They don't have jurisdiction. The feds, oh, yes, we do. This is right here. We just haven't been using it. That we started getting somewhere.
Well,
I can remember the year after the Exxon Valdez spill, the state legislature having a big dispute about the private property rights of the oil industry, and that they had the right to not have unannounced inspections by the Department of Environmental Conservation. This is right after the oil spill.
Well, that's absurd. I mean,
saying in the legislature.
This is part of our responsibility as citizens, as a state, to ensure that everything we do is quality from the terms of the environment. By the way, that line in the Constitution isn't just to develop, it's to conserve and develop for the maximum benefit. So, it includes an environmental commitment that all of us need to track and make sure we live up to.
And I think Governor Hammond said it best. He was definitely not anti-development, but he had to be proven to him that development was in the best interest of the state, that it returned something, perhaps something like the Pebble Mine, which is a huge undertaking. It's pitting one resource against another resource. So you have to weigh what is in the best long-term interest of our people, not necessarily a Toronto mining company and their stockholders, but what's in the best long-term interest of Alaskans.
Yeah, and once again, we got a very polarized situation. We have, if you start thinking ahead to Alaska's future, I mean, sooner or later, these mineral resources are going to be more and more and more and more valuable to the point where the pressure is going to be irresistible to develop mineral resources. But then those favoring the Pebble Mine say, well, we have to trust the process. We have good regulatory process in the state of Alaska, and we have to trust that process. No, I don't. Why? Where's the – that argument doesn't make sense. I don't think we're very good at regulating mining at all. And if you look at the federal mining law was written in 1872, and they never have mustered the political moxie to ever reform it. I mean, this is kind of crazy. So we get stalemated because we do need to figure out how to effectively regulate mining. We do. And I don't hear anybody talking about, well, now how do we do it? Let's go to Tom, joins the program from Homer. Welcome to Talk of Alaska, Tom.
Thank you. If we're going to save this planet, we're going to have to look at it in a hard way of phasing out fossil fuel and nuclear energy, our nuclear power plants. We've got the ocean currents, we've got the wind, we got the sun, we've got alcohol that can be used like Brazil does. We don't need to pollute our planet. It's like Tokyo now has got a problem with that radioactivity is coming towards us. And anyway, oil is all over the Gulf, and we don't need oil all over the inlet either. But that pretty much covers what I got to say.
Okay, renewable energy. Nothing really in the platform about that. This would seem to be an area where it's been said over and over again on this program that Alaska could be leading.
We do have a phrase, the third to the last, Steve, that's when we talk about the gas pipeline, we say alternative energy pioneer for America.
Okay.
And so that is really part of the vision I think a lot of us share. Some of us don't believe that you can just turn a switch and suddenly have alternative energy powering the globe. I mean, there's going to be some breakthroughs, some phasing in and so on, but there's tremendous...
Oh, my God, just talk to the engineers, man. Just talk to them. People actually have to make this stuff work.
You bet. I have a friend who puts in windmills throughout the state, and is doing some wonderful stuff, but it's still a pretty small scale. And so we need to keep pushing in that direction. I don't agree with you... I guess I'm just sort of destroying my own agenda by not agreeing on the Pebble Mine, because I totally believe we have to let companies that are ready to invest in Alaska totally explore and present how they're going to do it before you cut them off. That's the worst thing we could do in terms of keeping our economy going.
Yeah, but anyway, there's no plan. I mean, in other words, they said, oh, well, we're going to go and do it underground. And all the land contours and the hydrology is going to stay the same. That would probably be, you know, kind of knock the wind out of the sails of those that are arguing against the mine.
Well, that would appease those who don't like to see a big hole in the ground.
Right.
But in terms of the quality of, you know, whether they will protect the fishing, which I think is the key issue, let's that play out. Let's have the best scientists. Let's challenge them if we don't believe in it. But let's let this company explore and explain how they're going to do it. Because if they can do it right, I think they should do it.
Doing it right. Tom, thank you very much for your call as Talk of Alaska continues.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from Primera Blue Cross Blue Shield of Alaska, which has been providing quality health plans to companies and individuals in Alaska for over 60 years. More at primera.com. Primera Blue Cross Blue Shield of Alaska. We know the territory. Every Alaskan can make a difference when we file online for our PFD. You can shelter families in crisis, nourish the hungry and homeless, and protect those who have suffered abuse and neglect. And it's easy to share a little of your PFD through Pick, Click, Give. And good things will happen for the causes you care about. This message sponsored by ConocoPhillips Alaska and Mat-Su Health Foundation.
Well, it's Talk of Alaska, and we're talking about can we find an Alaskan political consensus? Our guests are Malcolm Roberts and Mike Kenney, and they think they've got 10 points they think most Alaskans could agree about. Let's go to Carl, joins the program from Cordova. Welcome to Talk of Alaska. Quickly, Carl, please.
Yeah, all I'm going to say is I think we should add an 11th commandment that Alaska will have in 5 years the best health system in the world. It's not as if we can't afford it in this state with the many billions we have tucked away. That's all I'll say. Thank you.
All right, Carl. Thank you.
Done. Absolutely right. And, well, thank you, Carl. It's absolutely right.
And we have there is investment going in that direction. We do see we have it very strong academically now in the medical area. And we see an aging population that needs more medical care. So, the vector has been upwards.
It has, and perhaps an investment in education would be perhaps a medical school.
Mm-hmm. Let's go to Nancy, joins the program from Kodiak. Welcome to Talk of Alaska, Nancy.
Yeah, thanks. I guess the main thing you just were talking about is a wedge, and the wedge is between the environment, the wildlife, the fish, and extraction. And it seems to me that we're forgetting that there is more than just humans living here in Alaska. And that the wedge is causing so much trouble in our politics because we are allowing these people to come in and just take and send things overseas, and it's like being a prostitute. I mean, it's the state of Alaska is like a prostitute, and then when something goes wrong, like an oil spill, then they cry rape. And it's I just think that we need to start to really scrutinize what we're doing. You cannot eat oil. You cannot eat gold. But yes, it buys food, but we're way up here in Alaska. We have, 5 days of food? And so we get rid of our salmon, for instance, at Pebble Mine there. And, it's kind of a fake economy up here. In 5 days, we're out of food. So I think we really need to look at there's other things up here other than humans, and it's called salmon, fish, and wildlife, birds, and we need to take care of all of this because we all live together, we can feed each other, and, you know, it's just, I hope that in one of those, I didn't hear all of the Ten Commandments there, but I'm hoping that it's strong enough that the wedge between the extractors that are sending things overseas and not value-adding and, you know, are not creating good quality jobs and the environment and the wildlife and fish and birds. So that's what I have to say. Thank you very much.
Yeah, Nancy, they have a point nine is love for the land, care for its beauty and wildlife. That could probably stand to have a little bit more specificity in it. This note here from John Ballard, you'll like this one, Mike. The Teddy Roosevelt administration obstructed the development of the Copper River Railroad by forbidding them to use Alaska coal. That forced them to purchase B.C. coal to smelt in the states. Otherwise, there would have been a railroad to the interior 20 years earlier. The surveys were already done. That was some amazing civil engineering that went on back then.
The state is rife with civil engineering marvels that are underappreciated.
Okay, let's let the callers have the last one. Josh and Homer, welcome to Talk of Alaska.
Hey, it seems like back to the hard rock mining. It's in our constitution. I mean, we own it, which is unique, and it's in the constitution that it should be developed for the good of all Alaskans. And it seems like all Alaskans, if you just took away the mining piece, and just said, "Wow, you just became heir to the largest gold find in history, copper molybdenum." Do you want to go down to the pawn shop on Drunken Binge and pawn it off for 1.5% of its value? I mean, how many Alaskans would agree that was a good idea? And as if it weren't bad enough that we would get so little for our own resource, so little, such a small cut of it, then instead we'll be left behind with the world's largest Superfund site, which is pretty much the worst case of corporate welfare.
All right,
going,
Josh.
Because it's a... It
okay,
is
we're
a
out of time, Josh. Thank you.
Yeah,
better royalties on minerals. Yes, no?
Yes, needed.
Yes.
Needed.
Mike?
Yes.
Absolutely.
At the same time, Steve, I'd just like to say that what we have here is a draft. We would welcome improvements from any of the listeners or other friends.
You got a website?
We don't have a website. You do. I don't know if you can help us in the right. Can we use yours?
We'll do the best we can.
Okay, great.
Thanks, Talk of Alaska. Thanks, Dave Waldron. Thanks, Josh Edge. And thanks, Malcolm and Mike.
Our pleasure. Thank you, Steve.
You.
Talk of Alaska is made possible by this member station of the Alaska Public Radio Network, by Alaska Business Monthly Magazine, publishing statewide news for over 26 years from Alaska's business sector, government, and industries. Information and subscription online at akbizmag.com. BP, supporting public broadcasting in Alaska. The Muskox Producers Co-op, whose Alaska Native members hand-knit Kiviut items, located in the little brown house at the corner of 6th and H Street. And by the Pebble Partnership, developing a comprehensive mine plan that meets Alaska's regulatory requirements while supporting sustainable fisheries in Southwest Alaska. PebblePartnership.com. This program is a production of APRN, which is solely responsible for its content. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of APRN, this station, or its underwriters. Today's program is available online at alaskapublic.org. CD copies are available by calling 550-8400.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.